We are on miracles number 45 and 46. All right, we're going to start with miracle number 45, which is going to be in 1 Kings chapter 18. And we're going to read all the way through because this story is absolutely incredible when you read the account. And what you'll see is it's every middle school student's dream to come to a passage like this, and we'll see here in a moment. But before we get to our miracle, I want to address a couple of words that are going to come up in our study. All right, one of them is bull. Okay, now I know a bunch of haters last week were making fun of the way that I said bull. Boil, okay? So there's two ways to spell bull, all right? The first way is this, okay? The second way is this, okay? Bull, bull, okay? All right? We just need to understand this together, all right? But then there's another word that's going to come up tonight, all right? And it's this word called caramel, okay? Caramel. All right, there are two ways to spell caramel. You ready? It is this. Okay, caramel. Caramel. See, bunch of haters again. All right. And then here's the second way that we're going to see tonight in our passage is caramel. All right, you can see how these two things say the exact same thing, caramel, right? I'm being a little facetious. I hope you know that. All right, but then there is a third word that we're going to see tonight, and we're also going to have a little bit of an English. Well, good luck with that. All right. I need to learn how to speak it first. All right. Is this, okay, there are two ways that we see sometimes in how we spell bell, okay? It is this, bell, or you may have seen this, bell. Now, what we understand is through our American English of the diphthong system, okay, this is not Baal. How many of you grew up hearing that this is the idol or the lower G god Baal? Anyone? Okay, that is how I have pronounced this word as a great royal ambassador of the Southern Baptist Convention as a 8-year-old child. This is also what I was taught, but I, through the study of this passage, have come to the understanding through a professor and president of Southern Baptist Seminary, Al Mohler, who gave me a lesson in this. Al Mohler, okay, I'm going to write his name down because you can't be mad at me for this correction, but Baal is not pronounced like this, but instead more like this. Baal. Baal. All right, so there's your English lesson. Because of our diphthong, this is your English lesson. So when I say Baal, and then I go back to my RA days and I say Baal, let's just go with the flow together, okay? And let's just not make fun of me for saying caramel or caramel or boil or bull. All of these things is confusing in a Georgia boy's language, okay? So moving on to number 45. I thought we'd get that English lesson out of the way there. But let's read starting in 1 Kings chapter 18. We're going to read verses 20 all the way through 40, okay? So we're going to get 20 verses in here, and we will not take a breath, so hold it for a long time, all right? Here's what it says, verse 20. So Ahab summoned all the Israelites and gathered the prophets of Mount Carmel. Then Elijah approached all the people and said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him." But the people didn't answer him a word. Then Elijah said to the people, "I am the only remaining prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let two bulls be given to us. They are to choose one bull for themselves cut it in pieces and place it on the wood, but not light the fire. I will prepare the other bull and place it on the wood, but not light the fire. Verse 24 says, then you call in the name of your God, and I will call in the name of the Lord, the God who answers with fire. He is God. All the people answered, that's fine. Then Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, since you are so numerous, choose for yourselves one bull and prepare it first. Then call on the name of your God, but don't light the fire. So they took the bull that he gave them, prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, Baal, answer us. But there was no sound. And listen to this. No one answered. Then they danced around the altar they had made. Verse 27 says, at noon, Elijah mocked them. He said, shout loudly, for he's a god. Maybe he's thinking it over. Maybe he has wandered away, or maybe he's on the road. Perhaps he's sleeping and will wake up. They shouted loudly and cut themselves with knives and spears according to their custom until blood gushed over them. All afternoon, they kept on raving until the offering of the evening sacrifice, but there was no sound. Once again, no one answered, no one paid attention. Verse 30 says, then Elijah said to all the people, come near me. So all the people approached him. Then he repaired the Lord's altar that had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, Israel will be your name. And he built an altar with the stones in the name of the Lord. Then he made a trench around the altar large enough to hold about 4 gallons. Next, he arranged the wood, cut up the bull, and placed it on the wood. He said, fill 4 water pots with water and pour it on the offering to be burned and on the wood. Verse 34 says, then he said, a second time. And they did it a second time. And then he said, a third time. They did it a third time. So the water ran all around the altar. He even filled the trench with water. At the time for the offering, the evening sacrifice, the prophet Elijah approached the altar and said, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today let it be known that you are God in Israel, and I am your servant, and that at your word I have done all these things. Answer me, Lord. Answer me so that this people will know that you, the Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back. Then the Lord's fire fell and consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones, and the dust, and it licked up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell face down and said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Then Elijah ordered them, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let even one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the Wadi Kishon and slaughtered them there. Okay, that was a lot of passage, but there is a ton in this, and it is so exciting. This is why I say that this is every middle schooler's dream text, okay? So go back to your days. Did anyone ever have the nights? I want you to reach back to your Southern Baptist roots here. Did you have pick a hymn nights? Anyone? Okay, I thought it was always for... Because maybe the music minister wanted an off night, and so he's just like, yeah, just do whatever you want. So let's pick a hymn. But there was always that one kid that would try to pick the one that maybe had a Bible cuss word in it, you know, from the King James Version. There's always that one kid, right? Well, if you read the ESV account of this passage, by the way, if you were not aware of that kid, most likely you were that kid, okay? And so judgment on you for sure, all right? But there is incredible drama in this text. I mean, think about what is happening. There's incredible action, and the characters of this story are incredible to study and look at. But not only that, but there is fire that is falling down from heaven Okay, so, I mean, you picture this. I mean, once again, this perks the attention of a middle schooler. But then, above all of that, there is significant potty talk in this passage. And it is kind of strange because in the ESV, it says when as soon as Elijah starts mocking their God, which is just so cold, you know, I mean, for Elijah, and such a gutsy move from him. But he says this, I mean, look in verse 27, at noon, Elijah mocked them, okay? He said, shout loudly, for he's a god. Maybe he's thinking it over. Maybe he has wandered away. The ESV says that maybe he is relieving himself. All right, that's what the ESV says. And so there's just a little bit of a potty joke that is just kind of thrown in there by Elijah, this man of God, this almighty prophet. And he says, well, maybe he's just kind of, he's away using the restroom. I don't know what your God is doing. I mean, so this is like ultimate trash talk here from Elijah building up this story. But imagine though, here is the scene, is that Elijah is the only prophet left on the scene. He is the only prophet left on the scene of Jehovah God. But surrounding him are 850 prophets of other gods, of other idols. And these prophets, there were 450 of Baals, and then there was 400 of prophets of Asherah. And so that's what we see through this text is 850 versus one man. And all of the dancing and all of the singing, all of the cutting and using use of the spear and everything that they were trying to accomplish could not be done. But remember, last week we talked about the prayer warrior that Elijah is. And it took the prayer of one man who was a prophet of the one true God that made this fire fall. So here's what is interesting. Remember, we talked about Jezebel. When he went back, this was not a good scene. So we started in verse 20, but there was a lot that took place in verses 1 through 19. And in verses 1 through 19 of chapter 18, you see a lot that is happening. Okay, so 3 years, we come to the understanding that 3 years of drought have passed, and then God told Elijah, hey, go to King Ahab. Well, this is a significant issue. King Ahab hated Elijah. He thinks that Elijah is the cause of all of their famine, cause of all of their problems. Everything is Elijah's fault. And so King Ahab hated Elijah. But not only that, but remember who Ahab is married to, Jezebel. Really, really hates Elijah. And Jezebel is the one who is evil in all aspects of her life. And in fact, that she is making it her sole agenda to remove every other prophet of God, of the one true God that she says, Jehovah God. She's trying to remove all of those prophets. And she is trying to preserve the prophets of the false God. She is trying to preserve the 850 and remove, but praise be to God, he always has a remnant. Obadiah hid the other prophets, and so there was a scattering of the prophets. They were hiding, and so Obadiah did that. God protected the prophets, but on the scene, Elijah is the only one who is left. And here's what we see. All right, in chapter 17, verse 2, in the life of Elijah, God tells Elijah, go and hide yourself. Okay, the Lord tells Elijah to hide yourself. And now in chapter 18, verse 1, just one chapter later, you see a completely different story. He doesn't say to hide yourself. He says, come out of hiding. And what does he say? He says to present yourself. Okay, so come out of hiding and present yourself. And this is what we see, okay? We see that the miracle is the fact that God rained fire from the heavens on command by Elijah's prayer. So that is our miracle, but what do we see surrounding this? And I think number one, All right, number one, we see that you must depend on God's timing. Okay? You must depend on God's timing. So Elijah was waiting on the Lord to tell him exactly what to do. He said, hey, go and hide. And now he's telling him, hey, go and present yourself. And listen, Elijah was entering into a conflict. He might as well, the Lord might as well have just written his death certificate by telling him to go to King Ahab and Jezebel. He might as well have just said, hey, I just want you to go to this place and I just want you to plan on dying because that's essentially what's going to take place. That's kind of what is going on within the thought of Elijah, because this is a no-brainer that they're going to want him dead. He's the last prophet that they know about. This is the last prophet that they need to get rid of so that they can run and do things the way that they desire. But this is what we see, because Elijah enters into conflict willingly. This is, you know, many times in our lives, we try to avoid conflict at all costs. We try to avoid tension. But what we see from Elijah is that he's not avoiding conflict. He's not avoiding tension. He's not even avoiding death. He is solely convicted on, I'm going to do whatever God tells me to do. And this is the example that we see from Elijah. So conflict, controversy, attention, none of these things are going to prevent Elijah from obeying what God says. And this is what we see from Elijah. This is his attitude, is that in conflict, okay? I mean, wouldn't you say that that's what Elijah entered into with Ahab? I mean, they fought. I mean, they were in essentially a battle against each other. So in conflict, what do we need to do? Only be confident in the Lord. This is very simple. See, here's what is happening on the scene, though. You had 850 men who were confident in themselves. You had one man who was confident in what God told him to do. You see, one is breeding arrogance. One breeds humility. And this is what we see from Elijah. And so this is what they say. Look, this is the way that Elijah deals with it. He says, Baal, answer us. This is what all of the prophets, 850. Baal, answer us. Answer us. Do something. And what do we see? Two times, no one answered. No one answered. And so then they danced around the altar. Okay? I mean, no matter what they tried to do, no matter what they were trying to accomplish, Baal was not answering, primarily because he is not there, all right? And this is what we see, thirdly, in this miracle, is what he was told was to go and do what? Go and present yourself. That's kind of an interesting thought here. Why would the Lord tell him, go and present yourself? Because what you see with Baal, with Asherah, all of these false idols, what you see is a very clear presentation of what they stood for, okay? If you were to look at the images, if you were to look at how they carved these idols and these gods, you would see Asherah, who is a god representing fertility. And so she has a womb. You could see a pregnant belly, and you could see her nursing a child. And so what she is presenting herself as a god of fertility. And so basically God's answer is, hey, they are looking at the false presentations of their false gods. I want you to go and present yourself as a presentation of the one true God. It's like an answer to the false presentations. And so this is what we need to understand for us, is that we need to be presented just as Elijah was, be presented as an ambassador for Christ. Right? This is what we need to do. This is what we see in our example that is surrounding this miracle. And then he ends and he kind of transitions once again, taking us to the next miracle of miracle number 46. And in miracle 46, we actually see two miracles. One is very discreet in its language, but this is what it says in the rest of the story. All right, starting in verse 41, it says, Elijah said to Ahab, "Go up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of a rainstorm." Okay, what we'll see later is that maybe there wasn't a sound, but Elijah was just relying on what the Lord had told him, that it's going to happen. If you remember in the first 19 verses, what we learn is that God tells him, hey, if you go to King Ahab, I'm going to end the drought. All right, so this is what we see in verse 42. So Ahab went to eat and drink, but Elijah, remember our prayer warrior, what did Elijah do? But Elijah went up to the summit of Carmel. He bent down on the ground and put his face between his knees. Then he said to his servant, "Go up and look toward the sea." So he went up, looked, and said, "There's nothing." Seven times Elijah said, "Go back." On the seventh time, he reported, "There's a cloud as small as a man's hand coming up from the sea." Then Elijah said, "Go and tell Ahab, get your chariot ready. Go down so the rain doesn't stop you." In a little while, the sky grew dark with clouds and wind, and there was a downpour. So Ahab got in his chariot and went to Jezreel. Verse 46, the power of the Lord was on Elijah, and he tucked his mantle under his belt and ran ahead of Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. All right, so our miracle number 46 is that the drought has ended. That the Lord has ended the drought just as he said he would. But there's a hidden, a little miracle that is within a miracle here, that if you look in verse 46, what does it say? That the power of the Lord was on Elijah. And then what happened? And he tucked his mantle under his belt and he ran ahead of Ahab. It was like all nature could not hold back Elijah from beating Ahab to Jezreel. And so I don't know if the Lord teleported him there. I don't know if he gave him just, the sonic type of light speed that where he just rolled up and just went. I don't know exactly how that happened, but the Lord miraculously gave him the stamina, the ability, the endurance, the speed to get ahead of Ahab. So there's just kind of a hidden miracle there. But our miracle that we're looking at is that the Lord ended the drought. And this is what we need to understand. Number one, about this, this is a very easy truth, but it is so good to be reminded that the Lord, the true Lord, alone is over creation. All right? That's what we see. The Lord is over creation. And this is important for us to realize because it's a theme that keeps coming up throughout Scripture. You know, one of the things that Job wrestled with, and one of the things that really allowed Job to find rest in his trial, to find rest in his tribulation, was for the Lord to break him down and remind him of his supernatural powers over the universe, and that nothing happens apart from God's hand. And the Lord was reminding Job that the same is true of your life, that nothing happens to you that is not filtered through my hand. And this is what we read in Job chapter 36. I'm going to write this down as a reference for you. Job 36, verses 27 through 28. I'll read them aloud to you. "For he makes water drops evaporate. They distill the rain into its mist, which the clouds pour out and shower abundantly on mankind. All right, so this is what we see. And then we see another reference about this from famous Amos here. All right, not the cookie guy, but the dude in the Bible. All right, Amos says this in chapter 4, verse 7. He says, I also withheld the rain from you while there were still 3 months until harvest. I sent rain on one city, but no rain on another. One field received rain, while a field with no rain withered. Okay, so not only does the Lord control all of nature, but he controls the destination of every raindrop that he draws from the water and allows to be released back to the land. Okay, and so this is what we see over and over again. And this withholding of the rain and then the coming of the rain is indicative of what God was trying to remind Israel of. If you look back at Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 17, it talks about this. It talks about the Lord's anger will burn against you. He will shut the sky as a moment of his wrath. He will shut the sky and there will be no rain. Okay, this is what Deuteronomy 11, 17 says. It says there will be no rain as judgment, as a wrath from God himself. There will be no rain. The land will not yield its produce and you will perish quickly from the good land the Lord is giving you. All right. And then this is the second thing. What did Elijah do? Seven times. And what is interesting is that he sent his servant. He said, go and look. As if Elijah couldn't bear to look himself. But more likely than that is that Elijah is burying himself. He has his head down between his knees. He is burying himself once again in prayer. This is what we keep seeing from Elijah. All right, and so this is what we see. Even in the midst of prolonged seasons, okay, remember our last miracle with the resurrection? Elijah just prayed and boom, it happened. Well, this time it's like his prayer has to be intensified after every single time the servant would come back and he would say, there's nothing there, there's nothing there, there's nothing there, until the seventh time the servant said, there's a rain cloud. And so his prayer life intensified and built with it. And this is what we see. Don't lose heart in the midst of God unfolding his plan. Don't lose heart. Maybe you're in one of those seasons right now where you feel like you are praying and praying and begging and asking and asking and asking. You keep looking up to the sky to see if there's going to be something happening. You're looking, God, are you going to answer? Are you there? And our scripture tonight reminds us, do not lose heart in the midst of prayer. Do not lose heart in the midst, because God is unfolding his plan as he sees fit and necessary within his perfect timing. Okay, we will pick up here next week.